Hey there, I'm so glad you're here. My name is Margaret Petrie, and this is Authentic Obsessions. The world is filled with prolific artists who have an obsessive hunger to create. I am so excited to bring you my conversations with these curious, unapologetic, and engaged artists to talk about this messy creative journey we're on. And I said it last week, but I gotta say it again. Thank you to everyone who tunes in to this podcast and to all of you who commented and sent awesome messages of support and love this last week. I don't have any words. Just wow. Thank you so much. Okay, on today's episode, Stephanie Hulman, a self-taught artist in Germany, shares her obsession with details and her obsession with change and transition. We talk about how she gets unstuck, her connection to the environment, and how she engages so deeply and finds that flow state when, for example, she's taking 2,000 snail shells and sewing them onto a canvas. Yep, you heard me right. And you're not going to hear this part, but we did decide that it would be a great idea after this pandemic lets up and we can all travel again to gather a bunch of artists and continue these conversations as we walk the Southwest Coast Path in Cornwall, England together. Anybody with us? Start saving your pennies. All right, please follow Stephanie on Instagram and check out her website. Links and takeaways are in the show notes and on her episode page at authenticobsessions.com. And remember, if you like this episode, if it resonates with you, I would love it if you think of someone else who would appreciate it and share it with them. This project is about creating a community and sharing the stories and experiences of creative souls, and I feel like we're really doing that. So thank you to everyone. All right, without further ado, here's my conversation with the delightful Stephanie Hulman. Hey, I'm so excited to have Stephanie Hulman here today. She's coming to us from Germany, and she reached out to me a while back, and I'm so happy she did. Her art is amazing, very detail-oriented pieces. She uses a lot of natural materials and found objects and does all the sewing by hand, but I will let her explain what she does later. So welcome, Stephanie.
Margaret, hi. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Why don't we start by telling us a little bit about your creative path? How did you get here?
My creative path. Well, I have always been an artist and maker all my life. I was one of those kids that always made things. I made puppets on a string. We made board games. I was not interested in learning how to draw or to paint naturally. That's always been too boring for me to copy nature or to copy things as realistically as possible. I always invented surreal scenes I was always into patterns. I loved patterns and colors. And yeah, I did all those things all my life.
When did you first create something that you loved? Do you remember?
That was probably around, 10th grade. In 10th grade, I made this tapestry, this type of carpet that you hang on the walls.
Uh-huh.
It was this project in school, and I made this tapestry, and the teacher was just stunned. She showed around in school. She showed all the other teachers. She showed it everywhere, and I was terribly proud. And from then on, I produced, stuff like that. I made, a special silk scarf or this bed linen, stuff like that. And the funny thing is, because I think that's the reason, because I was never interested in learning how to draw or paint realistically, all those people around me never thought that I would be the right person to proceed in a career in art. Because that was just Stephanie's always fumbling around with stuff and that's it. And it never occurred to me either. So I went into the language department. Languages and cultures were very, very interesting. And I always did stuff like that on the side, but never pursued it as a career.
So you don't have a degree in art?
No. I took a million classes here and there. I did wood carving and stone carving and so many things. I even took drawing and painting classes. That was interesting too, because I involved those parts into other pieces. And But no, I never pursued it in university, no degree, no nothing, no. But I never stopped doing art. Even when I worked, I moved to California for a while after school. I was an au pair girl back then.
Uh-huh.
I asked my au pair mom just recently, was I doing art when I stayed at your place? And she said, yes, of course you did. You made that and you produced that and you did glass carvings and stuff like that. And so I obviously always did, even when I don't remember now.
Was there a time that you remember that you moved from sort of art as a hobby and dabbling and just doing it because you had to into something more purposeful?
Yes, I do. That's interesting. That's an interesting question. Thank you. I used to live in Japan, and Japan was very, very interesting for me because it is so different from Germany. Every single day was difficult or interesting, or things happened I didn't believe because they were so different from my normal way of thinking, and the language, everything was, every day had something that pulled something out of me. Yeah. And I came back to Germany in 2001. And when I was back here, I understood everything, everywhere, everybody, even those difficult letters, like bureaucratic things or letters from the gas company and stuff. I understood everything. That was not the same in Japan. Those things are always difficult. And the people, their way of thinking was not difficult anymore. And I suddenly felt strange. I cannot put it into better words. I felt lost in my own country. I felt something was missing, and I started to do more art back then. I kind of went into that world and did it more and more and more. And I started to incorporate natural things into my art. And I remember I started using tea bags. I drink a lot of tea. I love tea. And I take the bag out, and messy me is not putting it into the dustbin right away. I put it on a saucer and it's sitting there. And then after a day or two, I take it and put it into the trash bin. And I took those tea bags. And you know, when the tea dries, it dries in those patterns and shapes. And very often I looked at it and I thought, oh, this looks great. And I threw it away. And then one day the patterns and shapes were so interesting. I cleaned it all out. I took the little tea things off. And I dried it, and I think I even ironed it. I'm not sure. I ironed some. I don't know if I ironed the first one. And I started to work with that. And that was the first time I might call it serious art. I did it almost every day, even though I was busy. I did two jobs. I was a single mom back then. But every time I had some time, sometimes in the evening or in the weekends, I worked on my tea bags. And that's when it all started to become more professional, probably, I can say.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. Describe for us, if you can, some of the beautiful art you make. And you guys, you can go look at her website and her Instagram and her episode page. There'll be photos there. You do mixed media assemblage. You do these amazing drawings. There are videos of you on Instagram doing the drawings, which I just think are so compelling. You can't look away. But tell us a little bit about the materials that you use. And I don't know, they feel very pattern rich to me, a lot of the work that you do.
Yeah, sure. When I worked with those tea bags, I started to incorporate natural materials. I started sewing little twigs on, or I started to use little rice grains and
wait, grains of rice?
Yeah, single grains. Yeah.
Oh, you must be so patient.
It's funny that you say that, because so many people think I'm patient. I am not a patient person. I am absolutely not a patient person. Seriously. Ask my husband, ask my daughter. I'm not a patient person. But when it comes down to my art, or when it comes down to sewing rice grains on one after the other, and I have pictures, there are thousands of them, something happens with my brain, with myself, something changes, and I go into this different state of mind, and it becomes the most important thing in the world, and I can hardly stop. I haven't figured out yet what it exactly is, because it doesn't have anything to do with patience, actually. But I started sewing those things on, and I noticed patterns. And Margaret, what I thought was, or what was really interesting, when I started to work with these small things, I noticed that every single rice grain is different. They have different shapes and different lines, and here's a corner different, the top is bent, or another one is pointy, and that was really fascinating. And that's when I started to get into, I wanted to show the details of the things around us. I started sewing on leaves from the same type of tree, because in order to show that every single leaf is different, I even took leaves that were sick. They had this disease. There were holes in them, and they would usually be probably twigs you throw away, you never look at. And I purposely took those leaves in order to show people what beauty there is and this amazing thing that everything is different. When I started doing this, and it sounds silly because we all know that every leaf is different and every piece of grass is different from the other, I suddenly started to understand it in a different depth. I started to grasp it fully. And this also sounds obvious and maybe even silly, but we all know that there's only one person like you. You are one single Margaret in the world. But through my art, I got to understand it deeper. It amazes me that every person is different, and we enjoy this difference, but only within a certain range.
It's like, and there are rules.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That there are unspoken rules of what's acceptable and what is not. You can go to a certain edge, and then you sort of have to stop because people get uncomfortable if you're too far out of that boundary. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, exactly. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm in awe. I'm looking at your pieces right now because I have your website up, and I'm looking at these pieces with these rice grains. And what you do is you take the grains of rice, you sew them onto paper, right? Is this paper?
Paper, canvas.
Okay.
Yeah, both.
And but then you make this amazing pattern. So from far away, you can't really tell what it is until you look very closely. It just is this amazing pattern.
And then people come close and they ask me if I do this by hand, and they say, oh, it's rice grains, or it's is this leaves. And I had this one aha moment when a friend of mine, she said, well, I had sewn on those little tiny leaves, also, I don't know, 1,000 of them. And she asked me, well, that's amazing that you sew them on, but what did you do with the leaves? And I said, well, no, I didn't do anything. And she said, but wait a second, why are they so small? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, there aren't leaves that are that small, are there? And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. I mean, that's a friend of mine who, an intelligent, open-minded, wonderful woman. And she doesn't even know that there are small leaves like that. And I started to sew other things on. Flowers that are not in bloom anymore, but the old, what do you call it?
The pod?
But yeah, the pods or like the back part. And it's things we don't look at, and we do throw away, or we never even notice. And it's not like, I don't mean to say that I notice everything. I have worked with stuff I've never seen, never noticed all my life, although those plants are all around me in Germany. I've never looked at those things. And there are two main messages probably that came through my art to me. It's not something I invented, but while I was doing this, Yeah, I started to understand two things, more or less. This one thing is that, well, everything is different, every single rice grain, every leaf, everything. And I think that many, many of our problems, the problems that we have nowadays with the environment, comes from the fact that we don't know about those things. I think we can only love things that we know of. We only want to protect the things we love. So if we don't even know about all those things in nature, it doesn't occur to us that there's something that we need to protect. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
For example, just recently, not so long ago, I went grocery shopping and I was sitting in the parking lot of that supermarket, and this dad with two cute little guys was walking towards me. And those cute little guys, one was maybe 3, the other maybe 5. They were hopping and jumping around, and I saw that the small one was wearing a t-shirt with 5 different cars, race cars. And the older one was wearing a t-shirt with 3 trucks. And then the dad turned around, and I saw him wearing a t-shirt with some oil company advertisement, Statoil or something, or Shell or something, I don't remember. And I thought, oh my gosh, those boys probably know every car. They probably know if it's a Mercedes or a Ford or whatever. They probably know how much that truck can pull or whatever, I don't know. But they probably have never noticed poppy seed pod and notice that they look like snowflakes, that they look like snowflakes. You know what I mean? And so yes. If they don't know about it, then they can't take care of or want to take care of it.
So this leads me to the question about reactions or conversations that you hope to spark in people when they view your work. You've really touched on this in the last few minutes, but can you describe a little bit more about that?
When I started doing this, sewing leaves onto canvas or rice grains onto paper, it was not immediately that I thought, oh, this is such a wonderful idea. I felt silly. I felt really silly. I mean, I'm sitting there for hours and I sew rice grains onto paper. This is really dumb, isn't it?
It's unique.
It's unique. I was not proud or anything. I didn't show anybody. And my husband then, when he heard for the probably 10th time, I said to him, oh my God, why am I doing this? This is really, really strange. He said to me, well, come on, give me a break. There are people sitting in their basement every day and they glue together little tiny planes or ships. That's pretty much the same that you do. You sew on rice grains. So what? And I thought, yes, he's right. But that gave me some kind of peace of mind. I'm not as dumb as I sometimes felt. And then this message came up and I started to show it through Instagram and on my website. And just when I thought if this is dumb or not, no, not if I should pursue, because I never doubted that. There was something inside of me that I couldn't stop anyway. But just when I needed it, this person, this lady from Australia, she DM'd me and she said, Stephanie, ever since I've seen your art, I walk with different eyes through nature. Oh. And I thought, oh my goodness. And still I get goosebumps every time. I sometimes doubt myself. Every time when I do that, I think of this one person and I think, oh gosh, this is exactly what I want to do. And if there's just this one person on earth who looks at things, she says, I notice berries and the difference in leaves and stuff, things I've never seen on my walks before. And I think if there's just one person on earth, it's worth it. But I think if there's one in Australia, there might be others. And in my first exhibition, I had so many talks just like that, where people asked me and were amazed. One of them said, I sit in front of the TV every day. I watch Netflix series all the time. I wish I would just once a week walk through nature and try to see what you see. And yeah. Or one time I took a walk along a huge river here in the north of Germany, Elbe, River Elbe. It was near Hamburg, and I found snail shells. So many. And I collected more than 2,000 in less than 2 hours. They were all dead and empty and pretty much clean, pretty much, not totally. And I learned that snails are the first to die because they have the soft body. When the temperature changes a lot or when there's chemicals in the water, so something must have happened there. And I sewed them on, and that sparked a lot of questions and comments. And I learned a lot myself through those talks. I learned so much, and I start to see more myself. And that's just wonderful. And that's something I never, ever expected when I started doing this.
I have to tell you a story. Yesterday, my husband and I were out for a walk, and we went to a beach that we hadn't been to in probably 10 years. And the last time we were there, it was sandy. This was on Lake Michigan, and we sat our beach chairs in the sand. And now the water is very high, and it's right up to the bank, and you can sort of walk along the beach, which we did. We scrambled. But my expectation for when we went there was very different than what we found. And so I found myself at the beginning of the walk thinking, oh, this is kind of boring and we're not going to be able to walk for an hour and a half. And it's a short, you know, we can't go as far as we normally did. And then I just sort of thought, we're here, pay attention. And I noticed this amazing sort of seafoam green lichen on a log. And then I noticed the driftwood on the beach that was stripped away, and these magnificent amber and orange and red colors, and these little threads on the branch that looked like, well, I don't know, I'll probably post a picture of them. But I just found myself looking at all those little details of things and really appreciating nature and the evolution of the seasons and what happens when the water comes up. And so I don't know if it's because I was looking at your art so much in the last week or two and really noticing that sort of just put something subconsciously in the back of my mind about, you know, I'm just going to channel my inner Stephanie and look for these details, right? I mean, it was amazing and it was beautiful. And my husband started taking pictures like that, and we kept noticing all these little tiny things. So you are making a difference, even if it's just calming ourselves when you're out in nature and letting go of the stress of it has to be a certain way. And you can just notice what's around you already in nature. And I think you're right. As a human race, if we start noticing more details in nature, that changes how we treat each other.
We treat each other and how we treat nature.
Yes, yes.
We have all those problems now because things like cars or sneakers are more important than than the bugs and the trees and the plants around us. We don't know anything about which type of tree likes to stand next to which type of plants, or yeah, that's just amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for what you said. I don't think that it was because of my art, but I'd love to think that maybe 3% maybe influence you.
Okay.
Channeling
okay.
My inner Stephanie. I love that.
I have to say I was probably channeling my inner Vicky Lentz too, who I interviewed on this podcast and talked a lot about being in the forest and the trees and all of that. So I think about that a lot. Talk a little bit about your obsession with details and how it manifested.
Well, yes, I think I've always been like that. That is, I think, my main obsession. My smallest child memories were me picking away small flowers, actually, and looking at all those details. Or when I used to live in Japan, I was scuba diving was so important for me. But it wasn't the huge sharks or the giant tunas or something, but I was sitting there and looking at those tiny sea snails with all their colors. And through all those details, you learn so much. And the second thing I am obsessed with, but it's intertwined with details, the fact that everything changes. Everything is always changing. We change, our bodies change, our surroundings change, relationships, the tallest mountains change, everything. It's just amazing. And you usually only notice through those tiny details that things change. Even when relationships change, you notice, oh, there are those remarks. He wouldn't have said that a year ago. Or, you know, why doesn't she pick me up from the airport anymore? That's a little detail. And yeah, that's my second main subject in my art. It's transition. I want to show that things change and how they change. And that's also the reason why I sew everything on. I mean, I could take some kind of glue, stick it on, and then it's there and you would see all those tiny pieces. But when I sew them on, you see the process and people look at it and involuntarily they ask themselves, how long did this take? So they think about the time, and time is part of transition, of change. And I give everything very much attention by sewing everything on. I give nature or things the attention back that details need. And that's my reason for sewing everything on. And I have the feeling I kind of moved away from your question.
No, you didn't. No. I was thinking about my walk yesterday, and I'm wondering what it's like to go for a walk with you out in nature.
Don't. People don't like taking walks with me. I get stressed when I can't stop and look at things, and people, they want to walk, and I stop here and there, and then they give up, and when they turn around, I'm 500 meters behind, and no, you wouldn't want to stop. you wouldn't want to take a walk with me.
That's funny. Does your obsession with details flow into other parts of your life, with cooking or in the home or with your family? Or is it really art and nature specific?
No, you're right. It's everywhere. Yes. Yes, it is with cooking. Yeah. I it's difficult to watch movies because when people walk into a room, I have to check out all that art in the background, and I notice the pillow and the color on the jacket or whatever, and sometimes I miss the conversation. Yes, yeah.
Okay, I just have one more question about your art pieces and then we can move on. I'm really curious, do you ever show the backs of your pieces?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I sometimes post it, or if it's not framed, yeah. I like to show the back. It looks crazy. Yeah, I don't go by a pattern. I go back and forth, and so they really look crazy. I have a few pictures on Instagram. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I got to look at those.
That's interesting. That's an interesting question. How did you come?
My husband asked me, just because when you sew something, the back of any embroidery work or anything, it looks very different from the front. And if you put them side by side, you might not be able to tell which was which. Well, you might, but you know, one of us wouldn't. And it's sort of like the mess behind the order. I think about the chaos behind the order, and that you're making these patterns on your art pieces, but when you turn it over, there's more to it.
That's interesting. Oh, Margaret, that's really interesting. The mess behind the order. Yeah, true.
So do you ever get stuck in your work, or do you feel like you're always in flow as you're moving along? And if you do get stuck, what do you do to get over that?
Yes, I do get stuck. And I very often get stuck when I start a new piece of work, which is different from others. When I work with rice grains or leaves or stuff like that, while I work with those materials, I get ideas for new pieces. And then it's not difficult to start. But with my transition pieces, I collect stuff. For example, there's this huge building in Berlin. It's called the Glint. It gets a, what do you call it, a makeover, total makeover. And before they started that, there was an exhibition. I walked through that building, and you were able to see the last 200 years of wallpaper in that building.
Wow.
Very, very old wallpaper that was stamped by hand. You know, Germany was divided, and it was in the eastern part of Germany. So you see old East German wallpaper and up to modern wallpaper. And I was allowed to go for one whole day. I was allowed to go through this huge, huge building and collect whatever I wanted.
Wow.
Yes, that was a wow day, really. And I have all that wallpaper and other tiny things I found, and I cannot start because all those things are unique and I don't have so much. So when I use it, it's gone. I glue it on first and then I sew it on. So that old wallpaper is brittly and dry. And once I stick it on and sew it on, it's there. It has to sit there. And so I need to decide which pattern to use. Or I have this one piece that's called One Day at the Beach. And I collected just one day. For one day, I collected stuff I found at a northern German beach. And I found plastic pieces and rubber pieces and, of course, shells and stones and driftwood and what else? Bottle caps, sea glass, yes, computer chips, wow. Whatever.
Yeah.
And it was so difficult to start sewing that on because people sometimes think I take the stuff and just sew it on. But you have those 500 pieces. And then you have to decide, do you go by size? Do you go from the outside to the inside? Do you make a spiral? Do you make, and so on. It's so difficult for me to decide that I very often cannot start. I can't, I'm stuck.
And once you start, you're committed to that path. And what if you choose the wrong way?
Yes, that's terrible. Right? Yes. What if I do?
Yeah. But is there really a wrong way?
There's not a wrong way. Yeah, well, I guess I think there is. Sometimes there's a wrong way. Yeah, sometimes I look at it and I think, I should have gone by color. I should have not gotten, yeah. But most of the time, I still like it, yeah. But then the pieces are stuck there and you cannot ever use them for anything else. And that paralyzes me sometimes. And what do I do to get unstuck? I very often, and I never show this actually, I do acrylic paintings. Very colorful, intuitive, abstract acrylic paintings with drawings on top. And sometimes I stick things on top as well. And it's like art journaling, more or less. Uh-huh. But I don't really... Yes, I do art journal. Yeah.
It must loosen you up, right? It's like stretching.
Yes.
And warming up.
Exactly. It's loosening up and I like it, you know, when I use acrylic paint and I don't like that color over there, I can draw over. It doesn't matter. It's just the opposite of what I do with my other art. Once it's stuck there, it's stuck there. And with acrylic paint, I can change anything. And if I hate the whole piece, I can make it white again and start anew. That's really, that's great. I love it. There's no pressure at all. And some of them I like very much and I would like to show them, but that's interesting. I don't because it doesn't match. It doesn't fit what I usually do.
Right.
And maybe even if I showed it, maybe I wouldn't be as loose anymore. Maybe. Could happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for asking.
Is there something else in your art life that's challenging for you that people might not expect?
Yes, very often I get asked if I'm a patient person. And I think people are surprised that this has absolutely nothing to do with patience, actually. This type of art hits something so deep inside of me. And I my mind wanders into this different world and is very, very alive. I'm thinking of so many things. My hands are working and I get obsessed. I can't stop. And it has nothing to do with patience. I think that's also something that people wouldn't expect.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. Are there any fears or insecurities that dominate your creative life? You know how you have to like make friends with your demons?
Yeah, yeah. Well, imposter syndrome, I think, yes, all the time. I love my art. I feel the importance. I could not do it. But at the same time, I look at it and I think, is this really art? And am I allowed to show something like that? I do have those days. I do have those days. Thank you. But if I was drawing wonderful see sceneries, I think I would feel more comfortable sometimes. Yes, that's difficult. And also there's one difficulty with my art. It takes forever to make it. You have to collect it all. You have to clean it up. You have to sort it out. You have to, arrange it 7-8 different times until you decide which pattern to sew it on to. Then you do the gluing and sewing, which takes forever. And then you have one piece finished. And it should cost several thousand dollars just for the time I spend with it.
Right.
But you can't sell it for that. So, and my art is not, this is hard to say. I'm really, part of me is really embarrassed to say this, that I'm looking at the money side of it. But I think artists have to also live from their art. I still have a day job, sure, but the monetary side is there. And I can only make, sometimes I can only make one piece in 2 months. So if I sold this in order to be able to live off of it for 2 months,
right.
I would have to have it doesn't work. And that sometimes scares me. That sometimes puzzles me because I don't know how to price my stuff. But I don't think it dominates me because I could stop and do something else, but I can't.
Right. The compulsion is so strong to keep doing what you're doing because your work is beautiful and it's valuable and you should get paid for your time. You absolutely should get paid for the time it takes for you to do your work. How do you store all of your art?
Yeah, my husband builds frames. And we put glass on the front, so we store them standing up and one right after the other, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work out without frames.
Talk a little bit about your studio space and your workspace.
I used to live in different parts of the world, and I love traveling and changing countries. And I used to not even have furniture because I never knew where I would live the next year. And then when I had my daughter, something changed. I started to get roots and I wanted to live in one place. And I found this nice apartment and I got my first furniture and started to settle. And then this art thing became more and more important. And suddenly I felt that I wanted to have a place where I can change anything I would like to change without asking somebody if I'm allowed to, I don't know,
right,
make a hole there or paint the wall green or whatever. So we decided to buy that house in 2015. And there I got a room all for myself. And I was amazed how this change in the environment changed me and my art. I didn't have to put everything away in order to work or to make lunch or... Yeah, I just had that room there and that's for my art. And everybody knew that when I'm inside that room, I'm working. That's also different than when you're working in the kitchen or in the living room. And
is there something in your studio that you can't live without?
Yes, I found that special light and I got so used to that light that I can hardly work in other rooms because the light is not there. Because I work very small very often, I need this really good light and it's just this perfect natural light. You have 3 or 4 settings. I love it. I wouldn't be able to live without it anymore.
So I'm interested in the physicality of your work. I imagine you sort of like scrunched up under the light with your shoulders hunched over. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's kind of what I imagine. How do you come out of that at the end of the day? How do you recover from that? And
well, that's not difficult actually.
No,
I have problems with my eyes. I start to get problems with my eyes and that's a big fear. Someday if I maybe have real problems, real big problems with my eyes, I don't know what to do. But no, I stand up a lot in between. And sometimes when everything is stuck on, I put it on a, what do you call it?
An easel?
Stuff. Yes. You put it on, I put it on an easel and I can sew everything on. So I do stand up and I sit down and no, that's not a problem at all.
Can we talk about your relationship with social media?
Oh, social media. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love social media because I meet people like you. I have met people from all over the world, and I am now 55, and I'm a generation that is not used to that. I mean, you sit right now on the other side of the globe and we talk to each other, we see each other.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes. And I am really amazed. And social media is the same. I can talk to anybody I like. I saw this great exhibition in Berlin. Mona Adelescu is her name. Amazing artist. It was just an accident. I've never seen her art before, and I was in awe. She paints like one of those old masterpieces, oil painting on wood, but she creates things you have never seen before. And I picked up Instagram and I wrote her a DM. I said, Mona, you are amazing. I'm just in your exhibition. And she answered. She said, oh, Stephanie, that's so nice of you. And I thought, oh my God, social media is just the most amazing thing in the world. Yes. But on the other hand, I feel guilty because there are so many wonderful people and I don't have the time to connect as much as I want to. It stresses me. Everybody probably knows this feeling that you have great friends, but still you don't call them, you don't write to them because you don't come around to doing it because there's everyday life. And social media is so fast. And when you don't contact people, when you don't answer to comments or you don't comment on their posts, I always feel I am not kind to them. And I cannot live up to the expectations that the kindness.
I totally understand. You're making perfect sense. I go on Instagram every day, but I can only scroll so far. I could spend hours scrolling, and the algorithms on social media, I don't know how they work, but they only show me certain people, right, in my feed. And if you have more than 100 people that you follow and you want to follow them all, you're never going to see everything. So you have to go in and search for someone to see what they're doing. If you don't come up on my feed in the first, 20, 30 pictures, I'm not going to see what you posted. That's what's frustrating to me, even though I love Instagram and it's beautiful and it's clean. I feel like I'm missing so much and I feel bad for doing that because someone posts something and I don't see it. But I can't spend hours every day scrolling.
Exactly. And that stresses me. That frustrates me and stresses me as well. And even when I see it, like you post your art, you post stuff about your podcast, and I think, oh, this is great. Oh, I need to let her know that I've seen it and that I like it. And I don't. And because I'm maybe 10 minutes a day on Instagram because life has been so busy.
Right.
And that really, in the back of my mind, there's always this, oh, I should still do this, or I should write to her. And that stresses me out. I don't do Facebook. That's way too
good for you.
I don't know. Is it good? Wouldn't it make a lot of sense for an artist to be on Facebook?
I've also heard that you sort of pick one platform and go all in. So do one thing and do it really well. And people will find you there. I mean, you can Google anything. People will find you on your website and they'll go to the media that works for them. So if you're not on Facebook, people are just going to have to go on Instagram or let them all know that, I'm happy with them. I'd rather have, 100 people who are diehard followers.
And right? that's also difficult. The people you want to follow.
Right.
Because actually I would only like to follow maybe 30, 40 or 50, those wonderful artists and those dear people I know. But then there's this person, I don't know, there's so many reasons. And suddenly you follow 300 or 400, just as you said, you can't you can't see them all the time. And maybe they get frustrated too, because they don't hear from you anymore.
I think we all just have to sort of come to an understanding that none of us can view all of us all of the time.
Yeah, we shouldn't be stressed out about it. Yeah.
Right. I agree. All right. Let's make that pact. That? Yeah. I'm making that pact right now. So even if I don't like your stuff or follow you, or, you know, even if I don't like everything that you post, it doesn't mean that I don't love your art and I don't love what you're doing. It's just too time consuming. We have to also be true to ourselves and get outside and notice the details of life and be good to our families and the people that we love. There are only so many hours in a day, and make art, right?
Are you on Facebook and everywhere?
I am on Facebook. I have a personal Facebook page, and then I did an artist Facebook page several years ago. And
do you ever check the comments?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I always check the comments and I respond.
Wow.
Yeah, but I don't have
a whole. That's a lot of work.
I don't have a lot of followers on Facebook, but there are like some people. Like there's a handful of people that only see me on Facebook, and I feel like if I left, then I would feel bad. I don't know. It's a conundrum.
Yeah.
Another artist posted recently. She was thinking of getting off Facebook, but she felt bad about it and she wasn't sure what to do. But it was just too much time, too much stress. And Facebook is just a very different platform with ads and political things. And it's just confusing. And it's hard to not see things on Facebook. Whereas on Instagram, I don't know, it's just so pleasing. No, you're doing great on Instagram and you should just keep there. Keep there and do it well. How about that?
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay. I'm curious about how artists and creative people set boundaries. Boundaries for themselves or from outside influences, and how do you keep them? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Let me make sure I understand your question correctly. You mean boundaries so that I make space for my art, that I make room and get time for my art?
Yeah. I was thinking about when you said when you have a room now for your art, you can close the door. You can leave things out, right? So sometimes it's hard to tell a loved one, I can't do this right now. I have to do my art. Like, how do you make space for yourself and stand up for yourself while not, you know, hurting anyone else in the process? Does that make sense?
Yes, very much. Yeah, I understand. That was hard for me to develop, but I have a morning ritual. All year long, I get a cup of coffee, and I sit outside 360 days a year. And I go through the day before, and I think about the day that's about to start. And I have this list. The list started in 2005, I think. And it changed many, many, many times. And this list makes me look at things that are important to me. Also my art and other things. The list changed several times, very often. I cross things out, new things come in, and this list takes care of me. It takes care of me, and it gives me the strength to say, no, I will not go with you for dinner tonight because I haven't been with my art for 3 days, and it's important. It might sound as if it poses some kind of pressure on me, but it doesn't. It really feels as if it takes care of me. It's a feedback system as well. I can tell by what I write there. It's actually in a list form, and I can tell that, yes, I did this for meditation. I did this every day this week, and it feels good. And today I just don't have the time. So, okay, it doesn't matter today if I leave it out because I've done it for the last 6 days. Do I describe it that it makes sense?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It seems very freeing to be able to set those boundaries for yourself.
Yes. And the list gives me the permission to say, I have to do this today. I'm sorry. I cannot do this or that with you. I set rules more or less. For example, I want to be on my with my art every day, every single day. And if it's just 10 minutes, 10 minutes a day makes 300 minutes a month. That's 6 hours. And that's the absolute minimum. No, that's 5 hours. I'm sorry.
I feel now that as a list maker, I have permission to view my lists in a different way, not as a controlling, obsessive thing, but as permission to take care of myself and the things that need to get done in order to take care of other people too.
Yes.
So thank you for that. That's good.
Yes. I don't only look at my art or at meditation, but yeah, things I have to do. And yeah.
I have a good visual of you sitting outside in the morning with your cup of coffee and doing that. So that's nice. I would love to hear you talk about Wabi Sabi. And I see that you have a workshop on Wabi Sabi. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And for people who don't know what Wabi Sabi is, explain that.
Wabi Sabi is, on one hand, it's easy to explain. On the other hand, it's a lifetime to understand. And it's really interesting. I think if you ask Japanese people to explain Wabi Sabi, they would go, oh, that's really difficult and I cannot explain it. If you ask Western people, they go, yeah, it's this and that. That's really interesting. That makes it interesting in itself. So wabi-sabi is this Japanese concept and philosophy of transition, of change, things that disappear. If you look at an old, crumpled up, dirty leaf laying on the street in the rain, it can be a wabi-sabi moment because you understand that things are not there forever and they are wabi-sabi. Things are usually on the brink of dying, disappearing, and it makes you reflect on life and everything. That's the Western short version of wabi-sabi.
So what does a workshop like that look like?
Well, first we look at the concept of wabi-sabi. We talk about, I try to explain it, and we talk about our understanding of it. And then usually I let the people go outside with their mobile phone and they take pictures of wabi-sabi things for the first time they notice. And we compare. And then I give them this, we talk about it and we discuss it, and we're usually in awe what everybody finds. And usually, even if we're just in the same garden, people find different things, or very rarely the same things. And then I give them an old postcard and they cut a little square inside.
A viewfinder.
Yes. And then I give them a viewfinder, or they make one, and they go outside again and they look at the things through the viewfinder and they get a completely different view at things, and they notice more details and other details, and they start to get into this. Yeah, it's again my obsession, details, but with this wabi-sabi concept. And it's just amazing how that changes. And then we usually start sketching. And even people that cannot, they think they cannot draw realistically with those viewfinders and all those details, they can, with a couple brush strokes, they can get the feeling of what they found. And then if it's a longer workshop, we have several papers, and I show them a special Japanese way of binding books. And so they take home this little booklet of wabi-sabi moments. And for some of them, it changes their point of view or their, yeah. And it's not only, they don't only start looking at nature or things differently, but also the concept of life starts to change. Is too big. I don't change their lives, but it gives a little, a new aspect they haven't noticed before. Yeah.
Perspective, maybe.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when I see people post pictures on Instagram and it ends up being a very, very tiny detail of a large painting. This usually happens with like abstract artists, right? And when I print papers, they're very abstract, lots of colors. And sometimes I'll just go in and I'll take even a 1-inch square and I will use a viewfinder, because when I do my collage work, I'm cutting from these big papers, and sometimes I can't see the beauty
amazing.
And the detail. So I take a piece of sort of wax paper and I cut a hole in it, And then I just put it all over the page to see, all over the paper to see what section that I want to cut out. And then you can see these amazing, it looks like, I don't know, there's sometimes there's a 1-inch square that is so beautiful that I wish I could replicate it.
Yeah. And those are things you, your eyes or your brain doesn't notice without that viewfinder. Isn't that amazing?
Right.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you, Margaret. Thanks for sharing. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I also saw that you belong to a, you belong to an association of hand paper makers and paper artists. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's still kind of new. I suddenly got that through social media, through Instagram. I got this DM if I would like to join, and I checked them out, and it's IAPMA. They're called the International Association of Paper Makers and Artists.
International Association of Hand Paper Makers and Paper Artists.
Thank you.
I'm just reading it from your website.
No, I feel embarrassed that I don't, I'm a member, I can't say the title.
I'll cut that out. Don't worry.
You don't need to. It's And I looked at their website and, oh, I'm so in love with 99.9% of the artists. They do amazing things. And I said, oh, thank you so much for this offer. But I don't feel apt to join. I'm not a paper artist. I'm not 100% working with paper. And they said, no, but your teabag art and your rice on paper is so unique. We would like to have you. And so I joined. And it's a beautiful community. I think next year or the year after that, they're supposed to meet in Japan. I hope we'll be able to go. And the artists that are of that community are so diverse and so warm. I love the warm atmosphere of this community. Yeah, it's just amazing. I'm very proud and stunned. Yeah.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to tell our listeners or talk about?
I think there's one thing. Even though I was always a maker and artist by heart, as many, many people, I think, I started to seriously pursue this as a career, or to, I don't know, maybe can call it here, professionalize it. When I was, how old was I? Well in my 40s. And only the last 5 years, I started to really come out and show and talk about it. And I am now 55. And I met so many people that tell me, oh, I'm already 32. I didn't go to university for art, and I don't think there's a chance to get a foot into the door. You're never able to show anything in galleries if you don't have an art degree and stuff. And I mean, there's so much I still have to learn, and there are so many places I would like to go with my art, and it has only started yet, but still I have had my small exhibitions, and I have even sold quite a few pieces already, but I just want to show people that it's possible. If your heart is set on it, if you feel that this is what you want to do, please don't think about university degrees. Just do it. Just do it. And if you can, do it every day. And I started to really do it professionally during a time when I had no time at all. No time at all. There was so much going on in my life. And I said, oh, I have to do some art at least 10 minutes a day. Otherwise I'd go crazy. And that's how everything started. So I thought I want to share this to show people it's possible. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. You are so right. And by the way, I'm 57 and I just started this podcast, and I don't have a degree in art. I've dabbled for a long time. I've always made things. Taken a lot of workshops. A lot of that is just for the community, because I think artists and creative people are so cool. I just want to be around them. And it's not too late. It's never too late.
It's actually never too late. Yes.
Yeah. No one's stopping you but yourself. Even if it's 10 minutes a day. Seriously, people, you can do 10 minutes a day.
I can. You can.
Right. Can you talk about the importance of the circle in your life and in your art?
Yeah, the circle and the spiral, actually. Mm-hmm. I do lots of my art is You're kidding. Margaret's showing me a tattoo on her arm, a spiral.
The spiral of potential energy, and it's a Japanese symbol, or the seed of the universe.
Yeah, it's actually, it's not only the circle, it's the spiral, actually. Margaret, you asked me because many pieces of my art, I choose the circle. They're just a few squares only. I think the circle is a very energetic form. If you look at mandalas from India, they are, of course, in a circle. A circle doesn't have a beginning or an end. It's stable and still it's smooth. It's for me, it's in a way, it's a symbol of life, and it's universal. That's why I choose the circle for so many pieces of my art. And I say the spiral because the spiral, if you look from the top, it's a circle as well. So it's more or less the same thing. But what I like about the spiral is, to me, it's a symbol of my own life. So many times I think I'm at the same spot. Nothing changes. I'm doing so much, but I don't progress. I don't seem to learn. I do the same mistake again. But when you look at it, even if you do the same mistake again, you have learned in the meantime. And you are, maybe if you look at it from the top, you're probably at the same spot again of the circle. But because your life is like a spiral, it moves up all the time, you are on a different layer. You are above the first spot. So even if you do the same mistakes again and again and again, it only looks as if you don't learn. Someday it will have some effect on your life.
Absolutely. There's just so much power in that movement. You wrote, no beginning, no end. A lot of things are not in the middle because some things are straight from the middle.
Yes. What I'm trying to say here, or what I'm trying to express, okay, some of the circles are not in the center of the canvas or in the center of the square paper, but they're moved to the side. For example, the piece I talked about earlier, One Day at the Beach. Our beaches have changed so much. 30 years ago, I would not have found all that crap on the beach. So I felt that it's not okay to put the circle with the pieces I found at the beach in the center of the canvas. I had to move it out of the center because it's off center now. It's not balanced anymore. Also, the piece I talked about with the snail shells, 2000 something, they're off center because the situation is off center.
Yes, that's beautiful. Your pieces are just outstanding. They're so compelling. I can't stop looking.
Margaret, thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I have goosebumps. Thank you.
How big are most of these, or are they all different sizes?
I love to work in a meter by meter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
some are smaller. Some are smaller. Yeah. But the pieces with the rice are, of course, not a meter by a meter.
Right.
They're smaller. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready for your rapid fire questions?
Yes, I am.
Okay. The first one is, can you share an art or creativity podcast you like that makes you feel like you can do anything you set your mind to?
I totally love Art Juice. Art Juice is this podcast with this two British ladies, and they are just wonderful, and they are so open about their process and their worries and their successes, and they're funny and witty, and yes, that's a great podcast. I also love Daphne Cohn's. She started off with the title The Creativity Habit. Do you know the book by Twyla Tharp?
Yes.
Creative Habit.
Yeah. Yes.
And that kind of related. And it changed to the name Beyond. I like that. She interviews artists and makers. And
great. Thank you. I'll link to those in the show notes. If you could sit down with another artist and have a conversation like this one, who would you ask?
Oh, I don't have to think about this. This is Friedensreich Hundertwasser. Do you know Hundertwasser?
No. Do tell.
Hundertwasser, he died maybe 40 years ago. Oh, I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I say I'm sorry to him because he's my hero. And aww. I don't even know when he died. He is this artist who made very colorful drawings. His drawings are wonderful. But what I would like to talk to him about, art was above everything. He said life is art. And he hated 90 degree corners or straight lines. He said even his architecture is without or with no straight angles and straight lines. And he was obsessed with art. He did art all day long. He started to put his art into a personal catalog when he was a child. And I would like to sit down and talk to him about art and nature and pursuing that career. And his whole life is an art ideology. It's amazing. Yeah, I would love to spend an hour or two or 20 with him.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks for turning us on to him. Okay, describe your favorite or a favorite outdoor spot.
Definitely the sea, the ocean. When I'm in Germany, definitely the Baltic Sea. And in the world, it's definitely Palau in Micronesia. It is just the most beautiful and amazing spot I've ever seen, and I want to go back at least one time in my life.
Oh, thank you for those images. Is there a non-creative endeavor on your bucket list, something you want to try?
Well, there's so much, actually, Margaret. Although I sew all my stuff on, I don't think I'm good with sewing. I would love to learn how to sew clothes.
Yeah,
I would love to do that. I would love to learn Swedish. And then my biggest problem right now, I would love to travel to so many places, but the situation our environment is in, I don't think traveling is a good thing to do, at least not to far away places and take the plane all the time. So maybe I should walk through Europe or something. I don't know. Traveling, yes. But actually, there are many things, yeah.
Okay, what are you working on next? What's next for you?
Right now, I am working on pieces for the Millerntor Gallery. That is a huge and wonderful artist and social event in Northern Germany. And my plan was to show how Millerntor Gallery has changed throughout the years. They had 10-year anniversary this year. It couldn't take place because of COVID. And I wrote to them and I said, do you have maybe stuff from the last 10 years I could sort through and then show the development over the last 10 years? And they let me go through their storage, and I got all kinds of stuff, and I started cutting out and arranging, and it's really funny. The result was there's not much of a change to or a transition to show. It's been this wonderful, warm-hearted, supportive, colorful event from the beginning to now. So it's just an explosion of colors. I love that. I didn't expect that when I started. I did this huge piece, 1 meter by 1 meter, and I'm doing several small ones now for people to take home, because the big one is not for sale right now. So I work on those. And then the next piece I really want to work on is the one I talked before with the Glint, the wallpaper special place from Berlin. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing those. That's great. Oh, I don't want to stop talking to you. This has been so wonderful. We have to do this again.
Margaret, it's been a pleasure, and it's wonderful to meet you. And thank you so much.
I will put links to your contact information, your Instagram account, your website in the show notes. And please go there and check it out. Check out her work. Really, thank you so much.
And thank you, Margaret, for doing this work, for letting us hear about all those wonderful people. I am more than flashed to be one of them. Oh. I'm so proud now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Please continue this wonderful work.
Thanks. Oh, wasn't that so great? I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed having the conversation with Stephanie. All right, here are the takeaways from today's episode. Number one, it's through the details that we notice changes and transitions. Number two, a change in your environment can cause a big change in you and your art. Number three, We can only love things that we know of, and we only want to protect the things we love. So if we don't even know about all those things in nature, it doesn't occur to us that there's something we need to protect. Number four, it's possible to have this art life if your heart is set on it and if you really feel that this is what you want to do. Please don't think about university degrees. Just do it. And if you can, do it every day. Thank you so much for listening. I know you have a million things you could be doing right now, and I sincerely appreciate that you're taking the time to tune in to these conversations. I hope they resonate with you and that you feel less alone after you listen to my guests share their experience, strength, and hope. Have a great week. Be kind to yourself and others. And remember, it's okay to acknowledge the mess, but just keep going and keep showing up. We need you.